The owners of the liquor store in Virginia discovered the intruder the next morning passed out next to the toilet in the bathroom. It was obvious to them that he had come through the ceiling to get into the liquor store, and once inside, had quite a party. He went on a drinking binge and drank all that was possible until finally passing out in the restroom. Of course, they called the authorities. The intruder was taken into custody and brought to the local animal shelter. That's right. The raccoon who went on the drinking binge the next morning woke up with one amazing hangover. Isn't it interesting that the way you tell a story can have such an effect on the conclusions people draw? As I was telling that story, you were undoubtedly thinking the intruder was a person who came in through the ceiling, but in fact it wasn't. It was a raccoon all along. So the way you tell a story can certainly lead people to certain conclusions that may or may not be correct at all. This morning we come to one very such story. We come to the story told by 10 of the 12 spies who went in to spy out the land that God had given to Israel. And the way they told the story had quite an effect on the people. But I'm getting a bit ahead of myself, so let's look back at the beginnings of this whole venture and what was involved. Look with me here to the book of Numbers, to chapter 13, and follow along as I read, starting in verse 1. Numbers 13, verse 1. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Send men to spy out the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the people of Israel. From each tribe of their fathers you shall send a man, every one a chief among them." So Moses went, sent them from the wilderness of Paran, according to the command of the Lord, and all of them, men who were heads of the people of Israel. So you get the point. The commissioning is, pick a chief, someone from each of the 12 tribes, a leader of those tribes, a leader among leaders, and send them into the land of Canaan that I have promised to give to Israel so that they can spy out the land. In other words, there are a lot of questions to be answered. And in fact, in the next section of scripture we read, we're going to find out what those questions were. But before we get to that, we need to realize two of the names on the list, which are given to us, which I'm not going to read this morning, starting in verse 4, but the two names of real note are the names Caleb and Joshua. They're the two that are going to file the minority report, and the other 10 are going to file the majority report coming back from the land. And how they tell that story has a significant effect upon the people. Now, Caleb, you remember, we met last week. We talked about him from the book of Joshua, who, when he was 85 years old, came to Joshua and said, "God promised me this land 45 years ago, when I was 40. So we know the age, of course, of Caleb, at least, when they went on this mission into the land of Canaan to spy it out. Caleb said, "The Lord promised me the land upon which my foot tread," which was Hebron, that area. "The Lord promised it to me, and now at 85 years old, I want that land." 85. And so we saw Caleb, and literally scripture refers to him having the spirit of Caleb, this spirit that wholly trusts in the Lord and believes God for great things in the future, even though he is 85 years old. We wrestle with that same question for ourselves. Do we focus instead, as we're about to see somewhat today, on the problems in front of us, or do we instead focus on the promises of God and His power to bring them to pass? We saw Caleb at 85 years old. He was focused entirely on the promises God had made to him and trusting in God's power to fulfill those promises. We saw that. And indeed he did. He took control of the hill country, and it is for his descendants and was to that day. So now we find this situation. This is now the preview to all of that that played out with Caleb. We find the preview to all of that now with the 12 being sent into the land of Canaan. So I pick up here in verse 17 of Numbers 13. Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan and said to them, "Go up to the Negev and go up into the hill country and see what the land is, whether the people who dwell in it are strong or weak, whether they are few or many, and whether the land they dwell in is good or bad, and whether the cities that they dwell in are camps or strongholds, and whether the land is rich or poor, whether there are trees in it or not. Be of good courage and bring some of the fruit of the land." Now the time was the season of the first ripe grapes. So here we have them going and now spying out the land to find out what's really happening there. What are these people like? What are their cities like? What is the agriculture like? What do they produce? How fertile is the land? I mean, this was always touted to them as the land flowing with milk and honey. Now, by God's direction, Moses sends them into the land to essentially prove that point, that this is indeed the land God is giving you. However, there are people there, already there, people who live there, people who have built these cities, people who have grown these crops, people who are not willing to give them up and just move out of the way for you to move in. So now they're going to find out exactly what they're up against. But remember, God has already promised to give them the land. How do they react to that promise in light of what they're going to see in the land? Well, let's see. Verse 21. So they went up and they spied out the land from the wilderness of Zin to Rehob near Lebo Hamath. They went up into the Negev and came to Hebron. And Ahiman, Shishai, and Talmai, the descendants of Anak, were there. You remember these from last week. These were the very sons of Anak that Caleb conquered at 85 years old. He went into battle in the land of Hebron to take it from these people because God had given it to him. So these were the very ones that Caleb defeated 45 years later. At this point, Caleb's 40 years old. They came to the valley of Eshcol and cut down from there a branch with a single cluster of grapes, and they carried it on a pole between two of them. Think about that for a minute. This is only one cluster of grapes, but it is so large that they now have to put it on a pole and carry it between two people. Can you imagine the testimony that would be to the Israelites when they returned? Look at the size of the grapes here. Look at the abundance of this land. This is unbelievable. You would think the people then would be all excited to know that the land God has given them is going to be an amazing place. That place was called the Valley of Eshcol because of the cluster that the people of Israel cut down from there, because Eshcol means cluster. So here we have the situation. They've gone into the land. They've spied it out. They've even brought back some fruit from the land, showing incredibly how amazing this land is. Fertile and productive, and this is what they can expect when they take possession of it. Now, as I said earlier, the way you tell a story has a great effect on the listeners. It can influence them in terms of the conclusions that they draw, just like the story I told about the raccoon in the liquor store. Here we have the report now of the spies when they come back, and I want you to note the effect and the report. At the end of 40 days, they returned. I'm in verse 25 now of Numbers 13. They returned from spying out the land. They came to Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation of the people of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. Everything seems to be going swimmingly at this point. And they told him, "We came to the land to which you sent us. It flows with milk and honey, and this is the fruit. Wonderful." Verse 28. However, However, the people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. And besides, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the Negev. The Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the hill country. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the Jordan. In other words, there are some problems. There are some problems with the people. These are fortified cities. These are strong people. These are big people. And even though it's a great land, there are some real problems here. Verse 30, though. This is where the minority report kicks in from Caleb particularly, but Joshua as well. Verse 30. But Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and occupy it, for we are well able to overcome it." One verse, only verse. Despite what you see as the problems, let's go up and occupy this land. God has given it to us. We are able to take it. Verse 31, the rebuttal. Then the men who had gone up with him said, "We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we are." So they brought the people of Israel a bad report of the land that they spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone to spy out is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people that we saw in it are of great height." And there they saw, we saw, the Nephilim, the sons of Anak, who came from the Nephilim, and we seemed to ourselves like grasshoppers, and so we seemed to them. This was the majority report of 10 of the spies. We can't do it. We can't take it. It doesn't matter what God's promises are. The people there are too large. In other words, their focus was on the problems rather than on the promises and the power of God. They became obsessed with what they were up against in a physical sense, as opposed to thinking in a spiritual sense and realizing if God has promised it, God will bring it to pass, no matter how big the people are there. They couldn't do that. They were so focused on the problems as they saw them that this is the report they deliver to the people. Amazing. So you can only imagine what the effect was. Verse 1 of chapter 14. Then all the congregation raised a loud cry, and the people wept that night. And all the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The whole congregation said to them, "Would that we have died in the land of Egypt, or would that we had died in this wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become a prey. Would it not be better for us to go back to Egypt?" And they said to one another, "Let's choose a leader and go back to Egypt." Can you imagine? God has promised to give them the land, but they believe the report of the 10 who are trembling in fear, and now decide they want to go back to Egypt, back to slavery, and they're ready to select a new leader, depose Moses, and put a new leader in his place who will lead them back to Egypt. It's amazing the effect it has when you focus more on the problems than on the promises. When you are overcome with fear rather than trusting in God to use His power to achieve what He has planned. And this is exactly where we see these people. The focus was on the problems, and the result was fear and defeat. Now we need to kind of close the loop on this and see exactly what happened with these 10 and all that was a part of it. But to do that, we got to go further into chapter 14. So let me take us here to verse 34. And this is God's judgment upon them. for what they said. According to the number of days, I'm in verse 34 of chapter 14. According to the number of the days in which you spied out the land, 40 days, a year for each day you shall bear your iniquity 40 years, and you shall know my displeasure. If you've ever wondered why Israel wandered in the desert for 40 years, it wasn't just so this faithless generation would die out. They had 1 year for every day that the spies were in the land. So as we now, next week, come into the book of Joshua, it's about Joshua leading Israel into the promised land 45 years plus after these events took place with the spies. So for 40 years, they are in the wilderness, and later, as I said, that incident with Caleb and Joshua 45 years later when they are in the land, the 40 years were sentence of judgment for their faithlessness, for the fact that they refused to trust God in what He had promised. Now, what about the 10 themselves? I, the Lord, have spoken. Surely this will I do to all this wicked congregation who are gathered together against me in this wilderness. They shall come to a full end, and there they shall die. So these are the people who believe the story as it was told to them by the 10 spies. This is their sentence of judgment, 40 years, 1 year for every day the spies spent in the land. But the 10. And the men, verse 36, whom Moses sent to spy out the land, who returned and made all the congregation grumble against him by bringing up a bad report about the land. The way you tell a story has an effect. The men who brought up a bad report of the land died by plague before the Lord. Of those men who went to spy out the land, only Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh remained alive. So that closes the loop on the story of the spies. 12 went in, 10 came out, believing there was no way they could take the land despite the promises of God, and the other 2 came out, believing fully, we need to go now. God promised it and God can do it. And that is the difference in these perspectives. It's the same difference we live with daily. When we focus more on our problems than on the promises and the power of God, we will tremble in fear and we will suffer defeat. We have a choice. We have a choice as to how we see the future and how we proceed into it. Am I going to fixate on all of these problems and give those problems the power that should only belong to God? Am I going to give them that place in my life? Or am I instead going to trust God, who has promised me that He will never leave me nor forsake me? He has promised me that He is always present with me. By His love, I know that He always has my best interest in mind. Am I going to trust Him in that and believe by His power He will bring about whatever He has planned for me, and I'm going to move ahead in that? Is that going to be my attitude? That's the spirit of Caleb we saw last week. Or is it instead going to be the spirit of fear that we see this week? The problems are too much. And so let's turn and run. The judgment of the 10 was their own death. A plague struck down those 10, and they all died. So that is how Israel came to spend 40 years now in the desert, where essentially God said, if you refuse to trust me, then take another lap around the desert. And so for 40 years, they spent this time wandering in the desert. And not only did Israel wander in the desert, prevented from entering the land, but so did Moses. Moses, leader of leaders, Moses who parted the Red Sea, Moses who's constantly interceding for these wicked, disbelieving people, Moses even was prevented from entering the promised land himself. So we've answered now part of the question before we come into the book of Joshua next week. We've talked about why Israel was outside the land to begin with. It was because of this disbelief. But what about Moses? Why was Moses kept from entering the land? Well, we get an answer to that question if we turn over to chapter 20 of the book of Numbers as well. So turn there quickly to chapter 20 with me and follow along as I read starting in verse 7. Numbers chapter 20. Israel is wandering in the desert. They are without water, and they are crying out for water. And so here's what God says. Verse 7. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, take the staff, and this is the same staff Moses has had all along, same staff he used in Pharaoh's court where he put his staff down and it turned into a snake. Same staff he used to bring about all the plagues on the Egyptians. Same staff that the Lord has had all along given to him. Take the staff and assemble the congregation, you and Aaron your brother. And this is important. Pay strict attention to what God says to Moses. Tell the rock before their eyes to yield its water. So you shall bring water out of the rock for them and give drink to the congregation and their cattle. And Moses took the staff from before the Lord as he commanded him. But did Moses go and tell the rock to spew water? Well, let's see. Then Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, and notice you can hear clearly the irritation in the voice of Moses. Hear now, you rebels. Shall we bring water for you out of this rock? Shall we bring water for you out of this rock? And Moses lifted up his hand, and he struck the rock twice with his staff. And water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank, and their livestock. And the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, because you did not believe in me to uphold me as holy in the eyes of the people of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land that I have given them. These are the waters of Meribah, where the people of Israel quarreled with the Lord, and through them he showed himself holy. Meribah means quarreling. Harsh judgment, was it not? Moses was told to speak to the rock and water would come out. It would have been a clear indication of God providing the water for the Israelites. But instead, Moses in his anger took that staff that God had given him and he beat the rock with it, expressing his anger. The rock still produced water, but it also affected Moses never being able to enter the promised land himself. Toward the end of his life, he was able to rise up on a mountain and look upon the promised land, but never to go into it himself. Seems like a harsh judgment of the Lord after all of Moses' sacrifice and leadership. And yet it's a clear point. God told him specifically what to do, and Moses in his anger did something else entirely. In fact, God sees it as a form of disbelief. When he commands something specific for us to do and we choose not to do it or to do it a different way, Moses here is told that is essentially disbelief. You did not believe in me and uphold me as holy before the people. It was as if Moses himself was showing the people, I am the provider of your water. And by beating the rock, he entirely disobeyed the Lord. So that is how Moses came to be in the position of standing on the outside of the promised land, looking in at the same time. Israel, because of their rebellion and disobedience and lack of faith in the Lord, And Moses even for his small portion of the very same thing. The effect was that he was never able to enter the land himself. But now, as we will see next week, the 40 years have elapsed. It is time now to enter into the land. Moses will not be the leader who takes them in. Instead, it will be Joshua. Joshua will be the one, and we will look at many aspects of his life as we go into the land with him that God provided. The 10 spies are the focus today. It was the fact that they focused much more on their problems than on the promises of God and His power to fulfill them. I want to tell you a story in contrast to those spies, the story of yet another spy during the Revolutionary War here in America. Nathan was a boy, frail and sickly, weak. Of the 10 brothers in this family, he was number 6. While the others were all outside, either farming with their father or walking the trails of the woods, Nathan himself was inside because he was frail and weak and sickly. He stayed by the fire. He stayed inside with his mother reciting poetry while the boys were outside doing other manly things. However, Nathan, amazingly enough, ended up entering into Yale University as its youngest student ever enrolled. You get an idea of why that was the case when you hear that he was able at the age of 11 to speak fluently in Greek, in Hebrew, and in Latin. He was obviously a brilliant scholar, even as a boy. And so he entered Yale at 14 and graduated from Yale University with honors at the age of 18. By now, though, the Revolutionary War was in full swing. Patrick Henry had already shouted out, "Give me liberty or give me death." And many of the boys the age of Nathan were already lined up to enlist. They were going to fight for their country. But Nathan instead retreated into the classroom where he was a teacher. However, there was a letter written to him by one of his Yale classmates that really affected him. In the letter, the classmate wrote, "Our holy religion and the honor of God demand that we defend our country." It moved Nathan to enlist in George Washington's army. Fortunately, he was appointed as a supply officer, which kept him far away from the front lines, which was fine with him. The idea that he was seen somewhat as cowardly was at least affected by him joining the army. But it was completely erased when another incident occurred. George Washington called for volunteers who would go to Long Island as spies and spy out the British Army and the British strength. Most were shocked when Nathan the bookworm, Nathan the teacher, Nathan the scholar, Nathan the one who always retreated from rather than looked for conflict, Nathan stepped forward and said, "I will be that spy. I will go and spy out the British troops." Don't think he went with a great deal of confidence. In fact, that may have had something to do with him being arrested shortly after arriving there. May well have seemed so uncomfortable that he aroused suspicion. He was arrested. He was brought before the British General Howe. He was found to be a spy, convicted and sentenced to be hanged. That night, they locked him in a greenhouse. Don't think he withstood that imprisonment with courage. He ended up vomiting most of the night in fear. He asked for a Bible, it was refused. He asked the next morning to see a chaplain, it was refused. He was marched to the tree where he would be hung. And yet, in that moment, he uttered one of the most famous statements of the entire Revolutionary War. It was a statement he had read in a Roman play. And the statement was simply this, which is how we know him. The statement was, "I regret that I have but one life to give for my country." That spy was Nathan Hale. He went down in history for uttering these famous words. And he is heralded as a hero of the Revolutionary War because of that. Nathan Hale, the unlikely spy. It's an interesting contrast between that spy and the 10 spies we looked at. The Nathan Hale seems to be much more the spirit of Caleb, that even in fear and trepidation of what would come, he still had the resolve to stand for what he knew to be true and right. As we face those same choices and decisions, as we look ahead, we have those same choices of, am I going to focus more on the problems and therefore tremble in fear and experience defeat? Or will I instead focus on the promises of God and the power of God? And even as I execute those things that I have conviction and resolve to fulfill because I believe it to be God's will, even in those moments of fear, I will still continue to trust God. We face those same choices. In this coming year, you will face them many times. You will have a choice to make. Am I going to be controlled by the fear I have because of the problems I see and they are looming so large that I can't see anything else? Or am I instead going to focus on the promises of God, that He always acts in my best interest, that He has purpose for my life, for His kingdom, that He seeks to use me and the gifts He has given me for His glory? Am I going to believe those promises and trust Him in His power to bring them to pass, as we see in the spirit of Caleb, as we see in the spirit of Joshua, and even as we see in the spirit of Nathan Hale, despite fear in the midst of it, refusing to turn and run? You will face those choices in this coming year. So will I. I pray that God finds us faithful, trusting Him, believing Him. I challenged you last week to contemplate this. What are you trusting God for that is so great it will take a miracle to bring about? Have you answered that question yet? We know how not to answer it. We saw that today from the 10. Are you still praying? Are you still seeking God? What does He have for you? What does He have for you in this coming year that is so great it will take a miracle to bring about? What does He have for you? That is the question. Pray with me. Father, once again, we want to have the spirit of Caleb. That is the spirit we desire, and that is the spirit we want to live by. The spirit that says, I trust God, I believe He has purpose for me, and I believe in His power to bring it about. Lord, I pray we go forward with that conviction. I pray that. I pray that You use us and that You teach us in this coming year. But mostly, Lord, that You embolden us to do great things in Your name because we trust You to achieve them through us. And I pray it in Jesus' name. Amen.